So just as a gauge, how many people know what ice is? All right, good. All right, so we'll stipulate to the court that much of this is not new, but basically what ICE is the new version of INS. So this is the federal body that's responsible for detaining and ultimately deporting or removing people here who are out of status. And it has a different detention system with different rules, different oversight, but much of the same issues that are found everywhere at corrections. So,
you've got to give your disclosure verbally.
Okay, so I think I'm getting there. So the title of the talk is Diversion of Mentally Ill Patients from Court-Ordered Care to Immigration Detention. So I have no financial relationships to disclose for this talk. So just to set the context here, people who are out of status with their immigration or, and we'll get into a moment the specifics of how people come into the setting, people who are detained by ICE may be found to have mental illness, just like people who are detained anywhere may be found to have mental illness. Now, the practice I want to specifically focus on is that all over the country there are systems set up for people in the criminal justice system to get you from criminal justice into some sort of court-ordered or high level of mental health care. And it gets called different things in different places, but basically this is something that judges and corrections folks and medical staff have hammered out over a long time, which is that we recognize people come into the criminal justice system, but they're too sick to stay there. So that out, that little relief valve that would get you into some sort of other mental health setting, does not work so well with folks who find themselves in ICE detention. And I'll get into the specifics of this. How often this happens where a court says, you know, somebody, the case we're going to see in a second is a turnstile jumping case, but somebody has some criminal charge they get pulled into a criminal justice setting. The criminal justice system appropriately says, you know what, this person is too sick. Like a judge, a lawyer says the person's too sick to participate in their defense. A judge looks at a forensic evaluation and says, you know what, you're right, go this other place instead that has to do with mental health treatment. That moment there is a decision point where then ICE and Homeland Security can say, you know what, instead of you going that way, we're going to take you this way into our system because we found that you're out of status or you have a pending detainer, you have an immigration issue. And so the implications of that is you pull the person away from mental illness treatment or mental health treatment into a system that I think those of us who have worked with and around the ICE system would say, like a lot of systems that are designed for very short stays, is not up to the task of handling lots of people with serious mental illness. And we'll get into this also, but it's also very hard for ICE to have these people in their system. Like the criminal justice system said, you know what, they're too sick for us. So then if another system that's based on detention takes them, I think they will ultimately also find the same thing, that these folks are too sick for them. So this circumstance, the third bullet there I think is important, is that people do not know that this is going to happen. So criminal defense lawyers may not know that this is going to happen to their client. The clients themselves may go to court thinking their criminal case, their turnstile jumping has been resolved, or they're going to go to an inpatient mental health setting, and in fact find themselves then all of a sudden in the custody of ICE. And then once somebody enters ICE custody, it's anybody's guess as to where they're going to end up, because there's 270 sites around the country. People get transferred. Basically, it's like a pinball machine that ends in Mexico for most people. And so they're bumped from here, from there, to here, to there, you know, and they may go somewhere else, but basically, you know, 78 to 85% of people are headed south to Mexico or to one of the Central American countries. And so there are a lot of places to stop along the way that lawyers aren't going to know, that family aren't going to know. It's a complicated set of transfers people are going through. And the last thing I'll mention there is that the reason this happens, and let me just go ahead to, I'm going to go ahead to this. So this is what happens in the criminal justice system, which is you get arrested, you go through these processes within the criminal justice system. At some point somebody realizes you have serious mental illness and a judge says, you know what, you should go into court-ordered mental health care. So That red X there is where ICE gets involved if you happen to have a detention issue, if you happen to have a detainer on you. This is an order that the federal government, through ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, gives to local law enforcement. It says, you know, if this person has a detainer, tell us about them. We want to know about them. That then brings you into ICE custody. Now, the reason I jumped ahead is, from the standpoint of ICE, they're charged with filling up a detention system around the country. Congress mandates that they keep 32,000 beds, I think, right now is the mandate. So they fill that up with people who have all sorts of immigration issues. And I'll tell you a little bit about how they do that. But what they're worried about is losing those people. And so this is a little bit of a hotel management issue, is ICE wants to know that if you go out of, if they find you in a jail or a prison, that they don't then lose you again. So I'm going to go back up to where I was to show you this letter. That bottom bullet there, people who have misdemeanor charges, which are a lot of the people who have mental illness, who get jammed up with the law because they jumped a turnstile or because they were loitering or because they were here or there, those folks have misdemeanors. So ICE's concern is that these folks then are going to go to an inpatient mental health center that's ordered by a judge, but maybe kind of lower security than somebody who has a big felony charge against them, who's, you know, accused of doing a much more heinous crime. So ICE's concern is they don't want to lose track of that person. That person gets to an inpatient mental health center. It's ordered by the court. Let's say the State Office of Mental Health is going to care for them. At some point, the providers in that center may say, you know what, the person's okay. And ICE then is concerned that they lose track of that person, that they walk out the door. So that, as we'll get to, is a concern, but it's manageable. It's like the concerns that stand in the way of ICE improving its practice and saving itself a lot of heartache and certainly improving care for patients is not, none of these challenges is really insurmountable. The only thing I'm going to mention about the historical context here is the middle thing, 1996 ERIRA, which every year when we discuss ERIRA I forget, but the words responsibility and immigrant are in there. Those are at least two of the R's. So this basically in 1996 moved the pendulum from don't detain to detain. So prior to 1996, most of the time, it was INS at that point, came into contact with somebody who was out of status, who overstayed their visa, or they found somebody in jail, who most of the time those folks were not detained. Post 1996, the pendulum swung to predominantly we'll detain you. We will put you into the system. I will say that what I should have at the bottom here, which is 2010, 2011, is this detention system has continued to grow and grow and grow. And I think we kind of held our breath a couple years ago thinking that we would have a new opportunity to shrink this system. But in fact, you know, I think 400,000 is a good estimate for the number of people detained in 2010. I think that Congress continues to mandate. So Congress says, here's money to detain this many people. So then ICE says, okay, we will take the money to do that and get beds set up all over the country to do this. It is a process that continues to grow and continues to be quite popular. So we already talked a little bit about the numbers. The last thing I'll put there is that this is an incredibly profitable and popular system, this whole global detention system. I think that, and rather than just point a finger at, let's say, private detention centers, which certainly are culpable and part of this and feed at this trough, I think every one of us who lives in a county where our county jail sets up beds to hold immigrants who are detained by ICE, I think that we need to think about the fact that that goes into our general fund or it helps the budget of the sheriff's department. It helps us all in a lot of ways. This is basically a transfer payment from the federal government to local and municipal governments and also private detention centers. And so that is, you know, there are a lot of public entities implicated in the propagation of this, not just for-profit private contractors who obviously are also profiting from this. So the two programs that I think you may have heard about in the news that kind of feed people from criminal justice into the system, and this is where we get into the specific issue of those with mental illness who are found by court to have lack capacity. Secure Communities is just it's basically a computer system. It helps you run this list against that list. This list is people who are locked up in whatever correctional setting. That list is people you have on your ICE detainer list. 287G is this more involved deputization of local law enforcement to kind of bring them into this system and actually make them part of the active arm of finding people who are in jails and in the community and getting them into detention. So this is a case, not from New York City, but from elsewhere in the kind of metro area. But it's similar to quite a few of these cases we've worked on at the Center for Health and Human Rights at NYU. But basically, somebody who has persistent, serious mental health problems finds herself arrested for loitering, comes into criminal justice. The criminal justice system does what it's supposed to, right? It does this. It says, you know what? The lawyer says this person has been in and out. She's persistently psychotic. A judge says, let's get a forensic examination, and we're headed in the right direction, because the person then gets a court order to go to inpatient mental health care. But because this person has a detainer, ICE says, you know what, we'll take them, and we'll put them into our system, and we'll put them into a system, this patchwork of 250 probably places around the country. ICE is trying desperately to reduce that number, but they still rely on a lot of county jails all over the place. And then we'll try and run them through this administrative process of deporting them, and also get them to a place that they can be deported from, like near the bottom of the country, which in the case of people who are persistently psychotic or schizophrenic or people with serious mental illness, is very hard. I've worked on some cases in York County in Pennsylvania where people have been bouncing in and out of inpatient psych treatment for years. ICE cannot, you can imagine the administrative challenges of trying to get somebody in front of an immigration judge to get them to walk through the steps it takes to get them deported. That's hard to do, right? Criminal justice said, we can't do it. So ICE steps in and says, we'll try it. But they buy themselves a lot of heartache. Putting aside the welfare of the patient, it's a difficult task. So this is just what it comes down to, is for patients, this is obviously, it's a horrible practice because it's bad for them. It interrupts care. They go into a system where they're going to bounce around, and they're much less likely, even if every individual ICE detention center had good mental health treatment, which is not the case, they're moving from one place to the other because the ultimate goal is to get them out of the country. And so they get into this system where there's no continuity of care. They then ultimately are going to go someplace where they are not going to get care. For ICE, I think that, and this is where we have some traction actually, in the, my colleague and I chair this ICE NGO advisory group, so we advise ICE on healthcare, and they listen or don't listen. But the thing that is clear, when I've gotten to know some of the ICE officers who do this job, and they're not pleased about this. Like, when they take these people into their system, it's a huge amount of heartache for them. The detention centers who get these folks who are seriously mentally ill are sending them out to the hospital all the time because they don't have psychiatrists, they don't have psychologists, except for maybe a couple visits a week. And ICE ends up footing the bill for all of this when what was set up in a lot of states, not all states, was that they would go into a state-supported, state-run mental health treatment plan. Now, Florida and three other states have actually recently passed laws saying no state resources can be used to care for undocumented immigrants in inpatient settings, and so this actually thwarts our basic recommendation, which is just let the process play out. If you're the Florida Office of Mental Health, when you see a case come across and a judge said this person shouldn't go to jail, when you find that detainer, you're actually obliged to say, we can't take this person. But in most states, they can take the person. So these are our basic recommendations, and we've actually made quite a bit of headway in the last year. ICE has told us that they, like, in theory, agree with this notion that they will allow this to go forward, but we have a lot of logistics to hammer out. So people who get court orders to go to inpatient mental health care should be allowed to go there. I think that for ICE, the logistical challenge is they need to figure out when a person goes to an inpatient mental health center, how are they going to keep track of them? And I acknowledge that from their security standpoint, that's something they need to work on. I think that the third bullet there is the basic bullet, which is people with serious mental illness should not be coming into this detention system. It's not up to the task of caring for them. They should not. ICE does the patients a disservice, and I think ultimately they create much, much more havoc for themselves and their system than is worthwhile. And I think that we have some guidelines at the bottom that we've been pushing to push for the care of people who are in detention who have mental illness. That's really all I wanted to say about that. I just want to thank Dr. Ochoa out in California, who's done a lot of work. She's a psychiatrist who's done a lot of work. And then my colleagues at the Center for Health and Human Rights.